Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is special coverage from WNYC of the impeachment trial of Donald John Trump. I'm Brian Lehrer, along with WNYC's All Things Considered host and legal analyst, Jamie Floyd. Hi, Jamie.
Hello, Brian.
And now that both sides have presented their opening arguments, we'll review a little bit and we'll open up the phones with a question for you. But also, here's where we are. It's a split screen view. There are the arguments we just heard on both sides these last 6 days of testimony, and there is also the bombshell John Bolton material from his book that is making the question of calling him as a witness the next really hard order of business for Senate Republicans. So let's talk about both tracks. But listeners, here's my question to you, and you can start calling in. After 3 days of Trump defense arguments, it comes from the Trump side. If you think Trump acted badly with Ukraine, do you have any qualms about removing the president from office and from this year's upcoming election ballot to boot, just for this one-time act of sleaze with Ukraine and trying to cover it up? Our phone number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And again, we'll review various pieces of both sides' argument. And you can talk about that, too. But here's the question. This is the question that the Trump side has been framing Saturday and Monday and today. If you think Trump acted badly with Ukraine, do you have any qualms about removing a president from office and from this year's upcoming election ballot to boot just for this one act of sleaze with Ukraine and trying to cover it up? Because that's all he's accused of by the House, at least officially, abusing his power by using official foreign policy for his personal gain and obstructing the investigation into it by refusing all documents and witnesses in his control. Is that enough to remove a president from office for? Or, as the Trump people argue, does it set the bar too low? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Here is White House counsel Pat Cipollone from during the arguments making this case in just 8 seconds.
They're asking you to remove President Trump from the ballot in an election that's occurring in approximately 9 months.
Now, that was Pat Cipollone on Saturday. In the arguments that just concluded, he made essentially that argument again as his closing remark. So our phones are filling up. And Jamie Floyd, that is not a legal argument, that's a political argument, but this is a political process.
I was just going to say that. This is a political process, and in many ways, the Constitution is a political document. And as we heard Alan Dershowitz say last night, that to a great extent, even as the founders argued about the founding documents' key clauses around impeachment, that was a political process. So the crux of the Republican argument, or I guess we should say the defender's argument, the president's defenders, the defense team in this case, if you want to look at it in terms of prosecution and defense, they say that this is a political case, a political matter, and you should take it up on the political day, which is election day.
Now, the Senate is meeting, I should say the Republican majority in the Senate apparently is caucusing right now. Mitch McConnell is leading that caucus as they figure out their next steps. What happens next on the calendar, on the timeline, is they come back at 1 o'clock tomorrow and they start 2 days of taking questions
yes.
from senators for the impeachment managers on either side.
In writing. Which will be an interesting broadcast conundrum for us. I mean, presumably John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts, would read those aloud, but they are still not to speak. They are supposed to present their questions in writing, which many listeners will be familiar with from jury duty. If you have a question for the judge, you put it in writing. And so that's what they'll be doing. They'll put their questions in writing, and that goes on for 2 days, 16 hours, 8 and 8, 2 days. or less. I mean, they don't have to take the full time, but this could be critically important because now we've had, as you intimated in your opening comments, Bryant, a real revelation that has put a lot of pressure on those senators that hang in the balance on evidentiary material, specifically witnesses. And the questions will go, I think, to that, whether or not we are going to thereafter, after these next 2 days, hear from witnesses and maybe have some evidence, some documentary evidence.
And here's where those two questions converge. And by that, I mean the question of whether to acquit President Trump or remove him from office.
Convict.
That question.
Yes.
Convict and remove. That question merges with the witnesses' question because it... in this way, I'm going to play a clip of Alan Dershowitz from last night, okay? And from my understanding, Senate Majority Leader McConnell is using this as a kind of cover to get his Republican senators to vote against calling any witnesses, notably John Bolton, because they're going to acquit him anyway. Because this Dershowitz argument, if they believe it, if they can embrace it, is their excuse.
I willingly acknowledge that the academic consensus is that criminal conduct is not required for impeachment and that abuse of power and obstruction of Congress are sufficient. I have read and respectfully considered the academic work of my many colleagues who disagree with my view and the few who accept it. I do my own research and I do my own thinking, and I have never bowed to the majority on intellectual or scholarly matters. What concerns me is that during this impeachment proceeding, there have been few attempts to respond to my arguments and other people's arguments opposed to the impeachment of this president.
And Alan Dershowitz's argument, as you know, Jamie, is that even if the president did everything with Ukraine that he's accused of doing, it is not a set of impeachable offenses because he didn't break any laws.
It doesn't rise to an impeachable offense, Alan Dershowitz says, because he didn't commit a crime, essentially. As outlined, he says, in the Constitution, high crimes and misdemeanors. And he says abuse of power is not a crime. And he says obstruction of Congress is not a crime, as contemplated by the impeachment clause. Where's the bribery? Where's the treason? Where is the high crime? Where is the misdemeanor? And he actually spent a fair amount of time on the word misdemeanor, what it meant then, mm-hmm. what it means now.
Right.
We don't have it here. Therefore, you have a political problem with this president, but you don't have an impeachable offense, says Alan Dershowitz.
And where it comes into doubt, I think, is at the beginning of the clip that we played. He said, I willingly acknowledge that the academic consensus is that criminal conduct is not required for impeachment.
Yeah.
And so what McConnell has to do is tell his members, okay, Dershowitz has this minority view, but it's enough for you to say, I accept Alan Dershowitz's interpretation of the Constitution, and therefore, it doesn't matter whether John Bolton testifies because Donald Trump did not do anything impeachable, even if he did it.
You know, the real issue here, and I imagine the lawyers in the Senate are going to start bringing on their own constitutional analysis as well, as jurors do in the jury box. Mm-hmm. You know, the judge always instructs.
Even if we don't know anything.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The judge always instructs you not to bring your own outside expertise into the jury room. And then, of course, the minute they get back there, that's exactly, I should say y'all, get back there. That's the first thing people start doing. Well, I'm a doctor. Let me give you my analysis of what the medical examiner said. The problem here, Brian, is that one can go back. It's sort of like reading Shakespeare. You can give it all sorts of different interpretations. Alan Dershowitz brought forward his interpretation of Hamilton, his interpretation of Madison. I can give you my interpretation. John Adams said, quote, misdemeanors in an office is a breach of trust and therefore an impeachable offense. So, you know, going back and reading what the founders intended 200 years ago is a very difficult thing to do. And we can all read our own interpretation into it to get to the result that we want in this moment. It's, you know, it's why textualism and original intent, that approach to constitutional Supreme Court jurisprudence, as you and I have discussed many times, is is a bit problematic and why the Thurgood Marshall living, breathing constitution perhaps is a bit more honest and certainly modern in our changing democracy. I understand where Alan Dershowitz comes from, and I will even give him the benefit of the doubt in terms of his integrity and desire to do the right thing as an intellectual matter. But I think it's very easy to manipulate the historical record to suit your argument in the moment.
And he might, just to put a pin in this thread, and then we're going to go to the phones, he might have had just enough integrity to sink his case because he acknowledged in that clip that the academic consensus is that criminal conduct is not required for impeachment.
And he's right.
And so
about that,
it's going to make it look too convenient for Republican senators to say, well, I know most legal scholars don't believe this, but I accept Alan Dershowitz's version, and I'm going to vote not to call John Bolton. So I think he made it really much harder than if he had lied and said, you know, this, you may not believe me, but this is what most legal scholars think. All right, Nora in Morris County. You're on WNYC. Hi, Nora. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. You know, it's a shame that we even have to use these words. We say that criminal conduct is not necessary to impeach a president. The bottom line is that we all know we voted in a sleazy president. We all know that he was going to be a president that didn't have moral and ethical values. So I don't understand why people are so surprised and shocked or even want to impeach him. Look, I'm a Republican. I didn't vote for Trump. I said, I even put on my Facebook, I'm a Republican, but I wouldn't vote for this man. To vote for. So where is our patriotism? You know, we're not patriotic either. Our Republicans or the Democrats are not patriotic. We voted for a president that we knew was going to do sleazy things in the White House, and now look what we have. Mm-hmm. We want to impeach somebody that's going to be reelected in a couple of months? That's so ridiculous. And it's a shame that our ethical and moral values are flushed down the toilet. All we speak is diarrhea in the White House, diarrhea in the Congress, and more diarrhea in the judicial system.
You said he's keeping a diary? No, I understood what you said. Nora, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And Jamie, it's a very interesting point. Look at the Trump campaign in 2016.
Yes,
we
on the
knew
bus.
He was running an unconstitutional campaign platform of wanting to ban all Muslims from entering the United States on that kind of discriminatory, a hate policy. And we know that he ran calling Mexicans rapists and drug dealers. Same. We know that he ran saying a judge who was sitting in, I think, the Trump University lawsuit couldn't rule fairly just because the judge was Mexican-American.
Yes, it was the Trump
University
lawsuit.
Know that in the Trump University lawsuit, Trump basically got tagged with fraud against the students in Trump University. We knew that before he got elected. So Nora's point is, we knew full well we were electing a president who would do this kind of self-dealing. And so it's unfair to the people who voted for him to turn around and kick him out on that basis.
But the one I take Nora's point. I take your point, Brian. But the one part of her point that I would take issue with is that this part of the process isn't impeachment. This is the question of whether or not to remove the president from office. And so this isn't a question of whether to impeach him and then we're going to reelect him. This is a question of whether his behavior has risen to the level of requiring removal from office. And I hear her despair. She seems to have resigned herself to the fact, as many, if not most Americans have, and certainly Democrats have, that the votes aren't there to remove him from office. But as Democrats have said, if the constitutional duty is to hold him accountable for acts of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, then that's the constitutional duty. Now, did they strategically do the right thing in not calling those witnesses to the House? perhaps they should have pursued it, regardless of the fact that we were 10 months away from an election. That's a political and strategic question. But the constitutional duty, Democrats would say, was there. And now the question before senators is, what is your duty in light of the evidence before you?
Let's take another call. Evelyn in San Francisco. Hello from New York. Evelyn, thank you so much for calling in.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thank you. What do you think? Is this enough to remove a president on?
My concern is, one, Trump's lawyer, Sekulow, said this would be an end of era of impeachment if he's found guilty. And Dershowitz,
it would
said,
be a continuation of an era. It would be establishing an era of impeachment, right? After the first almost 100 years of the country, no president was impeached. Andrew Johnson then went through it. Then it took till the 1970s for Nixon. But then look after that, the 90s and Clinton and now Trump. So if we do this, we're setting the bar lower than the founders intended and establishing this as an era of impeachment was the argument. And Evelyn, go ahead and continue. Thank you.
Yes, and my concern would be that if that is the case, and it may well be, why are we not calling for the rest of the story from witnesses and documents? In addition, Dershowitz said that abuse of power is not impeachable, and that opens the door to an incredible precedent that is very dangerous to set.
Thank you very much. So here we are on the witnesses' question.
Yeah, well, you know, we've had three presidents brought before the Senate. We've had four presidents impeached, very nearly impeached in Congress. And what many people don't recognize is there have been many, many presidents who have faced impeachment. Many presidents in the course of our history have had articles of impeachment drawn up against them. The resolutions haven't passed, but they've sat in the White House with the recognition that Congress was checking their power in the drafting of articles of impeachment. And I'm not looking at a list. I know I have mm-hmm. Google in front of me, mm-hmm. listeners, but mm-hmm. I'm not doing it.
When we say only Andrew Johnson and Clinton, plus the process had started on Nixon. There
but,
are others?
Yes. I'm going to say Polk. I'm going to say Tyler. I'm going to say both Bushes.
Uh-huh.
So in our modern time, and I'm sure our listeners are now frantically Googling, there was an excellent New York Times piece about the history, and I think it was Peter Baker, the history of impeachment in our country. So Congress has used its power pretty much throughout our history to check presidential power. The real fascinating point about the last caller's comment is we have never used it to convict, in other words, to remove a president from power. And the question is, why not? Well, because we recognize, first of all, we're not a part. You made this point today on your show this morning. We're not. This isn't a parliamentary system where we just remove a president pretty much on a no confidence vote because Congress has more power. But also, we recognize what a tremendously devastating move that would be for our democracy. We have a 25th Amendment. If we think a president has lost capacity, that's not what this is. What we're saying here is, has the president, has his behavior risen to the level of corruption, crimes, misdemeanors, bribery, treason that requires removal from office? And that the Senate has to recognize is a tremendously difficult turn for the country. So this is not a whimsical moment. It's not a celebratory moment. It's a grave and devastating moment for our country, whichever way it comes out.
And the Republicans have been using that argument to bash the Democrats for giving out pens.
Well, she always gives out pens. That's a, that's
Nancy
just
Pelosi
a,
at
that's
the
just
si-
a red
signing
herring.
Ceremony
oh,
of the
yeah.
articles
they
of
give
impeachment.
Out pens every look. I worked in Washington.
Souvenir
I worked in
pens.
The White House. Souvenir
at
pens
at this grave moment.
Oh please, I mean, look, it is a grave moment. I agree with them about that. This is where I agree with the Republicans. It's grave. It's somber. We should all be sitting up and taking notice. But that does not mean that senators of whichever party should vote no if they believe that the behavior rises to the level of an impeachable offense.
Listeners, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a one-minute break. Then when we come back, I'm going to refresh you, and maybe some of you haven't heard it yet, on the John Bolton bombshells, the things from yesterday's New York Times and the thing that you're even less likely to have heard, the stuff from today's New York Times, putting a lot of pressure on the Republican senators to at least vote for witnesses. So we'll do that. We'll continue to hear legal analysis from our legal analyst and All Things Considered host, Jamie Floyd, as the trial of Donald Trump moves into its next phase, and we'll take more of your calls. Stay with us. This is special coverage from WNYC of the impeachment trial of Donald John Trump. I'm Brian Lehrer, along with WNYC's All Things Considered host and legal analyst Jamie Floyd, who, by the way, will be back in the All Things Considered chair today.
At 4 o'clock.
After many, many days.
All news all the time.
Not preempted today because they did just adjourn the Republicans' opening arguments. And now that both sides have presented, we are reviewing a little bit. We're opening up the phones with the question for you. If Trump did what he's accused of, is it bad enough for removal from office and from the ballot? And we're also keeping our eye on the split screen moment. There are the arguments and the merits of the arguments, but there's also the bombshell John Bolton material from his book that is making the question of calling him as a witness the next really hard choice for the Republican majority. And let's get to the John Bolton news. The items from his book, and this book is going to be released in March, St. Patrick's Day is what I heard, and excerpts have been leaked to the New York Times, and they do seem to be changing the conversation among Republican senators because of the content of these excerpts. Yesterday, it was Bolton confirming something Trump has tried to deny, that Trump himself was holding up security aid for a Biden investigation. And Jamie, that's significant because one of the defenses that they've used for the president is, oh, Gordon Sondland was just saying he presumed that Trump was holding this up. Rudy Giuliani was out there doing what that rogue Rudy Giuliani does. But here's John Bolton, who, of course, as national security advisor, had tremendous firsthand contact with the president, writing in a book, if the New York Times report is true, that Trump was doing it, directing it.
Yeah, well, this is firsthand knowledge, if it's accurate, rather than secondhand or hearsay or supposition. All that the Trump defense team was relying on as part of its argument. And John Bolton, in addition to having that firsthand knowledge, as reported by the Times, which got a leaked version of this book, is also a Republican through and through, a staunch conservative, a national security advisor, a former diplomat, and he was, of course, in the Trump administration. He was reportedly fired by President Trump, and over time, it seems, related precisely to the matter at issue in the middle of this impeachment inquiry, now trial. And yesterday, at the end of the day, Alan Dershowitz stood up and said, as one of Trump's principal defense attorneys, I am here to tell you that whatever John Bolton had to say, it doesn't matter for my argument because it doesn't rise to the
exactly
level of a crime. But I find that fascinating because we really didn't know until today the full substance of what was in, according to the Times, the book.
And here's today's installment in brief from the Times. And this is interesting in part because it broadens what Bolton says Trump does with respect to autocrats beyond the articles of impeachment. So this is outside of the scope of the articles of impeachment, I think. Jamie, you can tell me if you think there's a way that it fits in. But the Times today says, Bolton, the former national security advisor, privately told Attorney General William Barr last year that he had concerns that President Trump was effectively granting personal favors to the autocratic leaders of Turkey and China. It says Barr responded by pointing to a pair of Justice Department investigations of companies in those countries and said he was worried that Mr. Trump had created the appearance that he had undue influence over what would typically be independent inquiries. Now, Jimmy, there's already a lot there, and it can be a little legally dense.
Yeah, it's the first thing a good lawyer knows is not to provide analysis over things she's not reviewed or that are outside the range of her expertise. So I don't want to go too far. It does seem to be beyond the range of this impeachment inquiry. They've narrowly drawn this. Remember, Brian, when the impeachment articles were first filed and we talked about the ways in which they did or did not intersect with the Mueller investigation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's because they very precisely focused on this Ukraine business. And while I find the looping in of Attorney General Barr to be fascinating, I don't see that it really intersects with the, without reading more, that it intersects with the impeachment inquiry.
You're a lawyer. So you're going to stay within the confines of the evidence. I'm just a talk show host. So I'm going to say—
Who thinks like a lawyer.
I'd like to. I'm going to say what this appears to imply. And it appears to imply that Trump is doing exactly the opposite with his favored autocrats, that the opposite of what he's accused to be doing with Ukraine. In other words— He's looking for Ukraine to launch an apparently fake investigation of Burisma to hurt Joe Biden. According to this, Bolton is saying that Trump is intervening with the Justice Department to get them to go easy on companies that may be guilty of something as a favor to Erdogan and as a favor to Xi Jinping.
Because if you... I don't disagree with that. The situation vis-a-vis Ukraine was uniquely beneficial to President Trump vis-a-vis the Bidens. If you accept Democrats slash House managers' presentation of the facts. And I think we have to accept that presentation of the facts. I mean, even the Republicans in their argumentation over the last 2 days have said President Trump, as president, was within the bounds of his authority to ask for this investigation.
Right. But in terms of the bigger picture—
And did not create any sort of extra presidential malfeasance.
But the allegation, when you take this and put it together with Ukraine, is that the president is committing abuse of power all over the place,
right,
with respect to ordering fake investigations and stopping real investigations.
Well, I honestly, and now I am not speaking as a lawyer, I'm just speaking as a citizen and just speculating, but I honestly wonder if he understands the rule of law. I've wondered this from almost the beginning. Does he understand the delicate balance that a president has to strike when exercising his power, when consulting his national security advisor, his attorney general, his defense secretary, all of the people who've gone through that constantly spinning revolving door? You are not an autocrat. You are not a reality television host. You are not even a CEO of a company. This is a very unique and special role. And I'm not convinced that he even fully appreciates when he is doing something wrong.
So with all this out there now and, you know, the potential implications that I'm reading into these few lines from the Times article may or may not be the bottom line. But this is why it's going to be that much harder for the Republicans not to call John Bolton to testify.
We're hearing decision. That they may have more than just the 4 votes they need from Capitol Hill. They may have 5 to 10 votes, which makes it easier for that 4th or 5th Republican who has to join the Democrats to vote for those witnesses to do so without the blowback from the White House and the rest of the party.
All right. The question on the table is if President Trump did what he's accused of doing, if you feel that they've proven the case from the House manager side, is that enough to remove him from office and from the ballot for 2020? Dennis on Staten Island is calling in with his view of that. Dennis, thank you so much. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks for taking the call. I don't listen to AM NPR radio very much. I was listening because of the hearings. And hello?
Welcome.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and as a lifelong Democrat who voted for Donald Trump, I got to tell you, as just a citizen, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a scholar, I'm not educated. Listening to the Democrats for the last 3 years, and to be honest, lies, untruths, to listen to even the way your host is talking, to tell you the truth, there's enough evidence of what happened in Ukraine in 2016 that the president and all of us should be concerned about it. It hasn't been debunked. And if he was asking the Ukraine to look into not just Joe Biden, but what the Democrats were doing in 2016, what George Chavez was doing in 2016, what the ambassador was doing in her offices, and where all of this stuff from Steele did not come from Russia. It came from Russian information through the Ukraine paid for by the Democrats. This is not debunked. This is not I'm making it up. I'm not crazy. I'm just trying to pay attention. And I can see garbage when I see it, and I understand the truth. And to be quite blunt about what the president was doing, he was doing something that we all should be interested in. It just so happened that Joe Biden is the Democrat running for president, and he should have known better to begin with. But to ask Ukraine to look into that is not out of order. And he was talking in private to the president, knowing that people were going to listen. And all of these bombshells from the Democrats and the New York Times, and I'm sorry to say, NPR. I mean, this is the first time I actually listened to you guys. But to tell you the truth, I mean, like I said, I never voted for a Republican president in my life.
Dennis, let me jump in for a sec. And I think we're just putting the information that's out there and exploring what the implications might be and not taking a side. But the Democrats would push back on what you said and say there was no evidence that anybody has presented, you know, nobody on Fox News, no Republican politician, that Joe Biden did anything corrupt to help his son, who was committing a kind of sleazy swamp creature act by trading on his name to take the job with Burisma. Joe Biden did nothing to help him get out of anything or help his company get out of anything. And that Trump, this is one of the main points of the Democratic House managers, Trump never expressed a concern about corruption in Ukraine per se, as he claimed, only that they investigate the Bidens, which seemed to be in his personal interest. Dennis,
right,
go ahead and get one more say.
Answer a question.
Go.
Did you see the video of Mr. Biden when he was bragging about telling them to fire the prosecutor?
Yes.
He'd withhold $1 million.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Did you see that?
We've
what
seen
did
it.
You think of that?
I will tell you the context of that as I understand it. At the time that he was putting that pressure on Ukraine to fire the prosecutor Shokin, the entire U.S. government, he was, you know, pursuing Obama administration policy, European Union policy, International Monetary Fund policy, and there were demonstrations in the streets of Ukraine calling on Shokin to fired because he was corrupt. And the Republicans, I think, in fairness, as a matter of fact, are trying to stand that moment on its head and make it appear like Biden was calling for the firing of Shokin to get him off the back of Burisma, when the facts don't seem to suggest that that's what was happening at all.
And maybe you should look at the facts, more facts.
Well,
do you watch OAN at all?
Not OAN. I watch a lot of Fox.
I watch a lot of Fox.
I watch OAN. I listen to WBAI.
Yes.
I watch all,
all
these
right.
guys.
Dennis, thank you very much.
I watch a fair amount of Fox, and in fact used to appear on Fox a fair amount. The key fact here about Ukraine is not about the Bidens. It is not about the investigation. It is about the request. And now Bolton appears to be backing this up in this manuscript. The request last summer that the investigation happen, and until it happen, the aide and the meeting will not. That's the question. And Bolton is now saying, apparently, that President Trump explicitly said he did not want to release the military aid to Ukraine in its trouble with Russia, our
adversary,
thank you. I wanted to choose my word carefully, until Ukraine pursued the investigation into the Bidens. Withholding the military aid and the meeting is the problem. That is the problem right there. That's the nut of the impeachment inquiry and now the trial. And all of this other stuff about Giuliani and Shulkin and the Bidens and Hunter Biden especially, all of that is just noise. The question is, did he withhold the aid? Did he withhold the meeting? Did he ask for the investigation? Were they tied together? And if so, what was his motivation? That's the question.
I'll play one more clip. We played Dershowitz and Cipollone from the Republican side. The Democrats replayed these 19 seconds of Fiona Hill, who was Trump's Russia advisor, in the House hearings, saying why she thinks what John Bolton had to say is important.
A specific instruction was that I had to go to the lawyers, to John Eisenberg, our senior counsel for the National Security Council, to basically say, you tell Eisenberg, Ambassador Bolton told me, that I am not part of this whatever drug deal that Mulvaney and Sondland are cooking up.
So that's what Bolton told her after a meeting between Trump people and Ukrainian people on July 10th. She told her to report the meeting to the White House lawyers, and that Bolton characterized it as the equivalent of a drug deal, whatever Sondland and Mulvaney were cooking up.
Yeah, that moment is one of the most powerful from the impeachment inquiry in the House. Now, I want to be fair to President Trump. He has tweeted just past midnight, I, all caps, never told John Bolton that the aid to Ukraine was tied to investigations into Democrats, including the Bidens. So now we have a dispute. Well, what do you do when you have a dispute? You bring in the witnesses and you let the jurors assess their credibility.
And of course, as we hear from the caller, the last caller, Dennis on Staten Island, and on my morning show today, when we brought up the topic of the Bidens, the phones lit up with people on both sides of that question. But the Republicans have hit a hot button when it comes to the Bidens. And one of the other things that we will see in the next 48 hours or maybe 72 hours is whether any kind of deal is struck to call John Bolton and call at least one Biden. That conversation is taking place.
Well, the Democrats say there will be no reciprocity on witnesses, Brian.
And the Republicans say they don't need reciprocity. They have 51 votes for one. It's up to their 51 votes to get the other. We will see.
You clearly understand how Washington works, Brian Lehrer.
You're going to put on your other hat now and host all things considered.
My other
right?
headphones.
Jamie Floyd, I'm Brian Lehrer. Special coverage on WNYC.